Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 382, titled The Untouchables. This is being recorded on October 13th of 2002. Before I explain the basic theme and the wry joke that underlies the title of the program, let me remind you that within a week of the recording of this broadcast, there will be a detailed, annotated, article-length description of For the Record 382, featuring text excerpts for people who like to read. That will be in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. Also, sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey, is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs are streaming at one URL. Older shows available for download only at another. I will tell you more about that at the end of this side of the program. Now, the title, The Untouchables, is obviously a reference to the Treasury Department law enforcement group led by Elliot Ness of television storybook fame, perhaps best known for nailing ultimately Al Capone on tax charges. As we're going to see as we delve into the material that is being featured on this program, the Elliot Ness Untouchables era tax and fraud statutes are now being employed against some of the Saudi charities that have apparently been involved with funding Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups. However, there's a wry joke underlying the title because so far, the Al-Qaeda funding has proved untouchable. And I suspect that one of the reasons for that is, first of all, that as we've seen in numerous broadcasts, including For the Record program number 367, the networks that have been used to fund Al-Qaeda and other terrorist organizations overlap what might be called an international money go-round, in which huge sums of money are being trafficked around beneath the level of public scrutiny. The Enron scandal featured some of these some of the Channel Island and Cayman Islands fronts. Those sorts of financial shenanigans have been used in a big way to help support Al-Qaeda and other Islamo-fascist terrorist organizations. Again, as I've stressed before, I do not want to be misunderstood as characterizing Islam as fascist, but rather Al-Qaeda and other organizations are utilizing a perverted form of Islam in order to perpetuate an Islamic form of fascism, which in turn, as we've seen in many programs, is inextricably linked with not only international fascism in general, but in particular the underground Reich. We're going to come back to that in a big way later on in this program as we access a very important article from the Washington Post detailing the Muslim Brotherhood connections to the March 20th Operation Green Quest raid that not only overlaps the milieu of the Muslim Brotherhood, but allegedly Al-Qaeda and Hamas and the Republican Party and the milieu of George Bush. One of the directors of George Bush's failed oil company, Harkin, a fellow named Talat Otman, who we've spoken about many times, interceded with the Department of the Treasury in order to basically he went to bat for the milieu that we're talking about here. So the international money go-round, which is utilized by many powerful institutions, is also being utilized by the Islamo-fascists, and for that reason, American financial organizations, among others, have lobbied for a weakening of the anti-terror financial crackdown statutes. That's one of the reasons why they've proved untouchable. I suspect another is the profound links between the Al-Qaeda milieu and the Bush administration, and beneath that, the underground Reich. Two of the points of investigation that I think need to be undertaken. One, Lugano, Switzerland, which is the epicenter of the Al-Taqwa nexus, including the Banco del Gottardo, Nada Management, and others. And in turn, Lugano, Switzerland is also the epicenter of the Thyssen-Bornemisza branch of the Thyssen Empire. That is a key element of the Bormann Underground Economic Third Reich Organization. And as we've seen in, among other programs, For the Record 370, it was the Lugano, Switzerland-based Thyssen-Bornemisza branch of the Thyssen family from which the Bush administration's, the Bush family's financial largesse sprang to a considerable extent. As recently as 1996, a Dutch journalist who was investigating this died of a precipitous heart attack despite the fact that he was in excellent health. And that those precipitous heart attacks to people in excellent health are a characteristic of people who have investigated the Thyssen-Bornemisza operation. Also, I think, and it's something that needs to be looked into, and that concerns the relationship between the Sullivan and Cromwell law firm, that's the old Dulles law firm, and the Saudi bin Laden group. Saudi bin Laden group, like Alan Dulles himself, goes back to the very genesis of Saudi Arabia, with the Saudi bin Laden group at the very foundation of the creation of the Saudi state and the Saudi kingdom, and with Saudi bin Laden group being exempt from issuing financial statements, one of the questions I have is whether perhaps, the Saudi bin Laden group, represented by Sullivan and Cromwell, was utilized by Alan Dulles and company in order to help mask the movement abroad of some of the post-war Nazi finances. People like François Genoux overlapped that milieu. So the Lugano, Switzerland, Nada Management, Thyssen-Bornemisza connection, and the Saudi bin Laden group, Alan Dulles, Sullivan and Cromwell connection are two of the things to be considered. Now, the untouchables. And so far, the Islamo-fascist milieu that I've been talking about has remained untouchable from an economic standpoint, perhaps because of its connections to the GOP and the Bush administration that we looked at in, for the record, 356 and 357. First article in this program is from the Financial Times of October 10th of 2002. This is an article by Edward Alden in Washington. It's headlined, U.S. admits clampdown on funding is failing. And in addition to the admission that the clampdown on funding is failing, this article is subheaded, Al-Qaeda funds charity head indicted. The article reads in part as follows. The U.S. acknowledged yesterday that its year-long effort to shut down financial support for terrorist groups has failed to impair the ability of Al-Qaeda to launch further terrorist strikes. Alan Larson, U.S. Undersecretary of State for Economic Affairs, told the Senate Finance Committee, quote, "It is unfortunately accurate to say that these organizations still have access to sufficient funds to carry out operations that will be very damaging to American citizens and to our national security." Unquote. The admission came as a U.S. grand jury yesterday indicted the head of a Saudi-backed charity on racketeering and conspiracy charges, alleging he diverted charitable funds to Al-Qaeda and other terrorist organizations. The Bush administration has been struggling to decide what steps to take to block the flow of funds to Al-Qaeda, a critical component of U.S. efforts to cripple that terrorist organization. The United Nations reported last month that Al-Qaeda continues to operate a large portfolio of ostensibly legitimate businesses worth between $30 million and $300 million, and that private donations from wealthy supporters of Al-Qaeda, totaling as much as $16 million a year, quote, continue largely abated, unquote. Mr. Larson said that while the U.S. disputes the accuracy of some of those figures, it is unquestionably true, unquote, that Al-Qaeda retains the financial resources to undertake missions that would cause serious harm to the United States. Quote, I don't think lack of access to resources is a major impediment to the operations of terrorist organizations at this stage, unquote, he said. And again, the intercession of people like Talat Atman on behalf of the milieu that we're going to be examining, and the intercession of Sullivan and Cromwell, which led a consortium of American financial organizations in a successful attempt at weakening the money laundering statutes imposed after September 11th. One wonders about that, and again, the possibility that the Saudi bin Laden group and Sullivan and Cromwell may have been used by the Dulles milieu for some of their post-war Nazi money go-round. And the Thyssen-Bornemisza Lugano Nada Management overlap is something to be thought about as well. Skipping down in this article, the U.S. says Enam M. Arnaout, A-R-N-A-O-U-T, Executive Director of Benevolence International Foundation, or BIF, engaged in a conspiracy to raise money from Muslim donors on the pretense that the funds would be used for humanitarian purposes. Adel Bataji, a wealthy Saudi who set up the charity in the 1980s, was named as a co-conspirator. The indictment alleges the charity mingled funds from unnamed wealthy Saudis who knew they were contributing to Al-Qaeda with charitable donations. In one 15-month period from June of 2000 to September of 2001, the indictment says, the conspirators transferred $1.4 million in funds from a Union Bank of Switzerland account to Benevolence International Foundation's U.S. checking account, where the funds were commingled with other donations and distributed abroad. The U.S. says Mr. Arnout systematically concealed from the government and his donors a 10-year history of support for Al-Qaeda, including a personal relationship with Osama bin Laden. One point I would note in passing, the Union Bank of Switzerland, as we noted in For the Record 335, has been a major epicenter of Bormann funds. Whether or not that is relevant. As we delve into the issue of the undeniable use of some of these Saudi charities as funding sources for Al-Qaeda, one should bear in mind that in the Wahhabi sect of Islam, there is no effective provision for separation of church and state. Indeed, Saudi Arabia itself is a theocracy, and just such an Islamic theocracy, and a totalitarian theocracy at that, is advocated by the Muslim Brotherhood, an organization which had an alliance with the Third Reich dating back to the 1930s. More about that later. I also want to make another point in passing, and that is that many of these charities, in keeping with the dictates of Islam, are no doubt functioning as charities. One needs to, I think, be discriminating and to realize that many individuals who have been involved with one or another of these charities did so for absolutely sincere and generous and charitable reasons, and that their protests of innocence may be absolutely sincere as a result. At the same time, it's pretty obvious that what I labeled in For the Record 356 as the Islamo-fascist Enron, this international money-go-round utilizing Switzerland and even more important, British territories such as the Channel Islands and the Cayman Islands, that these institutions, along with other similar tax havens and financial fraud fronts, are utilized by the business community as well as some of these Islamic charities to basically escape scrutiny and to perpetrate wrongdoing. In this regard, I would cite, and what I'm about to say might seem marginally tasteful to some people, so I'll apologize in advance, but in order to understand some of the complexities involved in this, we should note that as I'm speaking in October of 2002, another of the world's great religions has recently become the focal point of controversy because that religion as well has served as a cover for criminal wrongdoing, despite the fact that many millions adhere to that religion out of sincere devotion. That joke, and I think this will make the point, what do Kmart and the Catholic priesthood have in common? Boys' underwear half off. And again, I'll apologize for the marginally tasteful nature of that, but that makes the point. It's not that the Catholic religion is a criminal organization, but it has been misused by significant people for criminal purposes, and I think that is an analogy that one needs to bear in mind. Now, more about Benevolence International. The following is from the Los Angeles Times of that very same day. That's Thursday, October 10th of 2002. This is an article by Josh Meyer, Dateline Washington, and headlined, Head of Islamic Charity is Indicted. It's subtitled, Terror. A director is accused of fraudulently raising millions of dollars for Al-Qaeda and of being a close associate of Osama bin Laden. Skipping down, we read of Benevolence International. It also disclosed that, this speaking of the Justice Department, it also disclosed that when authorities raided a Benevolence International office in Bosnia in March, they found a treasure trove of incriminating Al-Qaeda documents, including details of how the group officially was formed on September 10, 1988. Top Saudi Arabian financiers, let me begin again. It also disclosed that when authorities raided a Benevolence International office in Bosnia in March, they found a treasure trove of incriminating al-Qaeda documents, including details of how the group was formed on September 10, 1988. Top Saudi Arabian financiers of that terror network, the text of the original oath of allegiance pledged by al-Qaeda members, and personnel files of individual mujahideen or Islamic warriors trained in Afghanistan under bin Laden's direction. Quote, "The documents show the American people and the world for the first time tangible proof of the funding of the world's most dangerous terrorist network and the oath of allegiance its members pledge," Ashcroft said, again quoting, "It is chilling that the origins of al-Qaeda were discovered in a charity claiming to do good," unquote. Before continuing with this article, I want to stress very emphatically, as we approach a midterm election, that this milieu, the Operation Green Quest milieu, or that milieu targeted by the March 20th raids, the Islamo-fascist milieu, the milieu of al-Taqwa, which overlaps the milieu being talked about here, in turn is significantly intersected with the Republican Party's ethnic outreach organization. In addition to the profound connections of George W. Bush and his family to this milieu, one should note that the milieu targeted by the March 20th, 2002 Operation Green Quest raids is heavily overlapped with and constitutes part of the Republican Party itself. Hence my raw use of the term the untouchables. They have proved untouchable in my considered opinion in part because of these Republican connections. Now, returning to the LA Times article of October 10th, the seized documents also show that in the mid to late 1980s, Arnaout served as the director of communications at a Mujahideen camp in Afghanistan under the direction of Osama bin Laden. While there, the indictment alleged, Arnaout was involved in acquiring and distributing hundreds of rockets, mortars, and bombs on behalf of jihad causes. Skipping down, I want to note here an allegation by an FBI agent that Benevolence International was involved in attempting to obtain chemical and nuclear weapons on behalf of al-Qaeda, and also that Benevolence International was among the organizations which has apparently, in cooperation with the Muslim Brotherhood, about which we will hear more in the second half of the program, that organization, Benevolence International, was involved with the Chechen rebels as well. The operations of al-Qaeda and the Muslim Brotherhood in Chechnya was one of the subjects that we looked at in, for the record, 381. Returning to this LA Times article of October 10th, one Chicago-based FBI agent said in an affidavit that terrorists who have tried to obtain chemical and nuclear weapons on behalf of al-Qaeda have had contacts with Benevolence International offices and personnel. The group also has made efforts to provide Chechen rebels and a related military group with money, an X-ray machine, and anti-mine boots, the FBI agent said. So I think this is a very, very interesting and significant development indeed. It remains to be seen exactly how vigorously this investigation is pursued. Bear in mind that if the investigation into these Islamic charities and into Islamo-fascism were to be truly pursued, it would not only go directly to George W. Bush, but as I've stressed, and as I cannot stress too many times or too strongly, the Republican Party's ethnic outreach itself. As we've seen in many broadcasts, the Republican Party's ethnic outreach organization has in the past served as a repository for post-World War II fascist emigre from Central and Eastern Europe, Ukrainian and Baltic Waffen-SS units, the Romanian Iron Guard, the Hungarian Arrow Cross, the Croatian Ustashi, and other brutal fascist collaborators of the Third Reich found a succor in the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization that in turn grew out of the Crusade for Freedom. That was an illegal domestic intelligence operation overseen by Alan Dulles, whom we referred to earlier, executed by Dulles' protege Richard Nixon, fronted for by a B-grade Hollywood movie actor named Ronald Reagan, and executed in terms of the State Department machinations by William Casey, a close associate of George W. Bush's grandfather Prescott, and of course the director of the Reagan-Bush campaign in 1980, and later head of the CIA. This brought these Eastern and Central European fascists and Third Reich collaborators into the United States in order to offset Jewish Democratic votes, and also in order to assist in polarizing the and mobilizing the Eastern European community in the United States against the Soviet Union for Cold War purposes. And for the record, 353, 356, and 357, I asked the question, and I believe this is a probability, about whether the Wahhabi slash Islamofascist slash Nada management milieu that is now part of that very same Republican ethnic outreach organization might constitute the residua of a jihad for freedom, utilizing, again, domestic anti-Semitism and anti-communism abroad, whether some of these Islamofascists were brought into the United States for that same reason, and also because of the economic ties to the Bush family. Now, the title of this program, The Untouchables, again is a wry reference to the nickname applied to Elliot Ness, the Treasury Department investigator who busted Al Capone on tax and racketeering charges, and I believe that the milieu here has so far proved untouchable precisely because of some of the connections that I have spoken about, the connections to the international money go-round, which corporations don't want to see interrupted, connections to the Bush administration, and I suspect through elements like Sullivan and Cromwell possibly, and certainly through the Thyssen-Bornemisza and Lugano, Switzerland, and NADA management connections to the underground Reich, again, which I believe the Bush administration is the point element for. And that's, I realize, incorrect English, since I ended a sentence with a preposition. Very important article about this milieu, and something that will set the reference to Elliot Ness. The Wall Street Journal of October 10th of 2002 carried a very important article by Glenn R. Simpson, who has been doing some very, very fine work for the Wall Street Journal on Operation Green Quest, and I would strongly recommend that members of the listening audience get in the habit of pursuing Glenn R. Simpson's work on the terror funding conduits for the Wall Street Journal. In the article that I'm about to read to you, note in particular indications of overlap between the milieu of Benevolence International and the milieu that was targeted by the March 20th, 2002 Operation Green Quest raids. Also note that the kind of fraud and racketeering charges that have been applied to Benevolence International also apparently are being sought against the milieu that was busted on March 20th. Wall Street Journal of October 10th of 2002, Glenn R. Simpson, headlined, U.S. Tries Al Capone Tax Charges in Some Terror Financing Cases. It reads, U.S. prosecutors, finding terror financing cases tough to prove despite new anti-terror laws, are adopting the kind of racketeering and tax charges used against public enemies from Al Capone to John Gotti. The Justice Department yesterday filed a lengthy indictment in Chicago against a Muslim activist it suspects of channeling money to Al-Qaeda. He is charged with heading a racketeering conspiracy engaged in mail fraud, wire fraud, obstruction of justice, and money laundering. A charge of support for terrorism is last on the list and doesn't need to be proved for a conviction. That activist, Enam Arnaout, is an alleged confidant of Osama bin Laden, who the government says used his Benevolence International Foundation as an Al-Qaeda front in Bosnia and Chechnya. Prosecutors also were trying quietly to build a similar fraud and money laundering case against a group of Muslim activists in Northern Virginia, people familiar with the matter say. In that probe, investigators say the government has obtained evidence that large sums were secretly transferred from the U.S. to Islamic groups under suspicion in Bosnia for supporting terrorism. The Virginia entities are mostly controlled by Muhammad Yaqub Mirza, a Pakistani immigrant well known in Muslim circles as a money manager for wealthy Saudis. Mr. Mirza and several of his closest business associates have played key roles in some dominant Muslim groups in the United States. In a June court filing, the Justice Department said an official of one of Mr. Mirza's charities has, quote, established links to Osama bin Laden and other members of al-Qaeda, unquote. Mr. Mirza's attorney says he hasn't committed any wrongdoing. Congress passed the Patriot Act in the aftermath of the September 11th attacks, intending to smooth the way to investigating and prosecuting suspected terrorist activities. In many cases, investigators have managed to track the flow of money through the complex web of organizations and individuals they think are financing terrorism. But distinctions between profit and nonprofit businesses and between charities and radical groups are muddy. It's generally not clear who's really in control of the money and who knows that the ultimate goal of the funds is to finance terrorism. And often, clarifying those points would require relying on sensitive intelligence. Quote, the preference would be to nail them on material support for terrorism. That is very hard to do, unquote, said former FBI terrorism analyst Matthew Levitt, a veteran of the Justice Department's largely fruitless terrorism investigations of the 1990s into U.S. Islamic groups. Quote, pre-9/11, there was a hesitancy to Al Capone people, he added, no longer. Quote, it is definitely the way to go when material support for terrorism is not in the cards, he said. Prosecutors are particularly focused on potential tax law violations they have found in probing the charitable status of tax-exempt groups set up by U.S.-based Muslim activists. The tax evasion strategy was made famous in the 1920s by Treasury Secretary Andrew Mellon and his top investigator, Elliot Ness, who examined gangster Al Capone's books to charge him with evading income taxes. Quote, we are not going to ignore an IRS or tax violation. Absolutely, we're going to go after that, said Jimmy Gurule, G-U-R-U-L-E, the Treasury Department's Undersecretary for Enforcement and the head of its campaign against terror financiers. The strategy is likely to have fallout for the U.S. government's relationship with one of its closest allies, Saudi Arabia. And we're going to come back to this article in the second half of the program and note the overlaps here with not only the Republican Party, but Benevolence International and the milieu of the Muslim Brotherhood. I made reference to the Spitfire website. That's www.spitfirelist.com, SPITFIRELIST.com. Within a week or so of the recording of this program, there will be a detailed, annotated, article-length description of this program featuring long excerpts of text for people who prefer to read. The Spitfire website is equipped with Real Audio and features the latest pair of For the Record segments on Real Audio for about a week. And the Spitfire website is linked to two websites maintained by sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey, that is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs are streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emory, one word, D-A-V-E-E-M-O-R-Y. Older programs are available for download only, and a longer URL linked to both the WFMU.org Dave Emery site and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website as well. Spitfire also carries the archive shows and the lectures that I've done over the years as well. You can reach them at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005, and email at mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. Note that the For the Record descriptions now are in their own individual files, at least the posts 9/11 are. And note also that the downlink only WFMU website link has been straightened out. This concludes side one of For the Record program number 382, The Untouchables, being recorded on October 13th of 2002. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.